Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice, Family Cosmetic and Dental Sleep Medicine, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Geno's East, Downtown Nashville, and OsteoStrong Nashville.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders on this Monday evening here in Music City, USA. That's right, Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Tonight, I am joined by Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio as we talk all things Preds, all things hockey here in this hour, as we always do on Mondays. Justin, how are we doing this evening?
Doing all right, Ryan. Thanks for having me again. It's an interesting playoffs going on right now with every single series being 3-1, so I'm very curious of what's going to happen the next couple of days.
I know. We didn't get a Game 7 in Round 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think we only got one Game 5? In the best of five qualifying round. So one game five, zero game sevens in round one. And at this point, Justin, like you said, all the series leaders holding a 3-1 series lead. I would be surprised at this point if there is a game seven in round two.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if there is one series where I think a comeback could be made, I think it's going to be in the potentially the Lightning and Bruins series, just given the Bruins' experience and the talent. But that's the only series. I can't see any other team forcing that many games in a row to go into elimination, especially because the Lightning have a chip on their shoulder, of course, from last season. But they're obviously tremendously talented, as we all know. But so is Boston. And Boston, Tampa Bay has turned into one of those series where it's almost like the Nashville-Winnipeg series before. We had two really good teams being in the second round. It's just how it went, how it played out because of the way that the round-robin games went. So they probably shouldn't have met in the second round, but Boston has that experience. I don't see any other team, though, potentially forcing to anything like that.
A lot of people have been dubbing that series as the de facto Eastern Conference Final before we ever get to the Eastern Conference Final. And I would agree in the West. I think Dallas has figured out Colorado. I don't think Colorado has enough to come back, especially after they let yesterday's game four get away from them. That is a surprise. I thought Colorado was going to outmatch Dallas, but Dallas is proving that their system is working. And some teams, they have a similar system where they're very defensive-minded, but they don't have the offense to back it up. Dallas absolutely has the firepower to back it up, and their firepower has been hitting on all cylinders when you think of Jamie Benn and Joe Pavelski and Alexander Radulov and the rest of those Stars forwards. I mean, the Stars right now look like they could give Vegas a run for their money in the conference final if it turns out to be Vegas-Dallas in that Western Conference final.
You're absolutely right. And the way that I'm seeing this is that Colorado is going to be around for a while. I mean, the way they're building their team up, is this is not the end for them with how young they are and the type of talent they have on that team and in their systems right now. So Colorado's going to be scary. We saw how scary they absolutely can be given their speed and their tenacity. I mean, just having Nathan MacKinnon, who I think still doesn't get talked about enough in this league. And then Dallas Stars, I think what's helping them so much, especially in this weird type of playoffs, is their depth. And they have some veterans there that have been able to step up. I mean, I'll even throw out the name Alexander Radulov, where in a post-game interview, he even said, you know, maybe I'm not scoring all the time, but it's a team game, and I want to do whatever I can to help the team. And him saying those right things is something that shows his maturity over time since when he left the Predators organization, that he's really matured, and that veteran type of leadership of where he's been throughout his career, too, and we're seeing that. Plus, I mean, with Dallas, they have a good goaltending tandem just in case they need that, too, and one of the best defensemen in the league in Miro Heiskanen, and he's extremely young. I mean, Sam Girard is as well, so it's scary to see what the West is going to be like in the future, because Colorado's going to be around for a while. I think Dallas, their window is still open for the next few years. And then you see Chicago can continue to be competitive, even when they have guys getting older and have a lot of money chopped up into that. Minnesota right now is still Minnesota. Winnipeg is, but Colorado and Dallas and St. Louis, even with their veteran talent, it's scary, and it's going to make it more difficult for Nashville in terms of trying to remain competitive and being a complete playoff contender.
You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio here this evening. And one of the series that we have not mentioned is the Islanders leading the Flyers 3-1. And the Cinderella Islanders are one game away from punching their ticket to the Eastern Conference Final. And it would be two trips to at least the third round or later for Barry Trotz in the last 3 years, which is hard to believe. And the fact that he left Washington after winning a Stanley Cup was already surprising 2 years ago. But Justin, Barry Trotz now getting some revenge on the Capitals in round one, essentially getting Todd Reirden fired in Washington. And now they are making the Flyers look like they are completely beneath them in terms of the talent and what type of team they are. And the Flyers are a good hockey team, and the Islanders at times are making this look really easy.
Barry Trotz hockey, baby.
The Islander way.
The Islander way. I mean, look at these scores. Aside from game one, so you have the 4-3 overtime win for Philadelphia. They're only one in the series. But then the next two in game three, game four, 3-1, 3-2. That's Barry Trotz hockey. I mean, defensive hockey, low scoring, winning tight games as well, opportune goals. I mean, and like you said, Philadelphia is a really good team. On NHL.com, when they do the regular season series analysis, in every single category, the Flyers are favored. When it comes to goals for per game, goals against per game, their power play, their penalty kill, their faceoffs, their point percentage. And we're talking goals for per game. The Flyers were 7th overall in the regular season. The Islanders were 22nd overall in goals for per game. Goals against per game, pretty similar, and that's typical of Barry Trotz. The Islanders were 9th overall in goals against per game. The Flyers 7th overall. I mean, Carter Hart's been phenomenal. But Barry Trotz hockey, and he's proving how much of a commodity he is in the NHL, especially when he's given talent. And that's one of those conversations I know has come up around the Preds boards is, well, could Barry Trotz have won a cup with the Predators if he had the talent that was given to him by spending towards the cap? Because we all saw the spending towards the cap for the Predators didn't start until Peter Laviolette came along. I mean, you had the Philip Forsberg trade, and that kind of signified a, hey, going to have to make some moves to make sure more talent is in this system to actually be a Stanley Cup contender, not just make the playoffs every year and see what happens. Yeah, it was at that time. It was time for Barry Trotz to go, but it's the whole, imagine if he had this talent to work with, like an Alex Ovechkin, like a Matt Barzal, and the plethora of talent that's in the Islanders organization that just doesn't get talked about because they're not the Rangers. I mean, it's a very curious conversation to have right now that it absolutely ranks him up there, especially amongst active coaches in terms of being elite.
I do want to get to that conversation here shortly about where he does rank in the National Hockey League in this moment, but Justin, I would put at least 3, maybe 4 Predators teams on par or even better than this Islanders teams. Three or four Barry Trotz Predators teams, I should say. Like, you think of the 05-06 and the 06-07 teams on par or better. You think of the 11-12 or the 10-11 or the 11-12 Predators teams on par or better than this Islanders team. Would you agree?
That's a really tough one because
In terms of on paper talent with Barry Trotz.
On paper talent, I still find it difficult. The sixth team is the one that I think would be very comparative to it. But the thing that keeps getting to me is that looking at the roster for the Islanders and some of the talent in terms of the draft pick ranking where they were, Predators didn't have that type of talent that were, you know, lots of top 5, top 10 picks in there. But I will say that, yeah, there were opportunities for Barry Trotz, and then you had the one run where it's injuries and that happens, or the matchup against the Sharks, where it's just like, of course, really? They got to play the Sharks in the first round, and that's how it goes.
Yeah.
So look at it like that, too. There's some injury bugs that hit, and then it goes in waves and everything, too. But, I mean, Barry Trotz did really good things with the Predators when they weren't even close to spending to the cap. I mean, he took a blue-collar team, made them extremely competitive, and got to the second round. And it's really tough to get past that. I mean, the Stanley Cup playoffs are difficult to do, but they still didn't have that overall top-end talent. They had it very briefly, and I think they had some good top-end talent when J.P. Dumont was on this team and Steve Sullivan. And obviously we all know J.P., he got rung. His bell got rung, and he was never the same. After that game against Vancouver, which still frustrates me to no end today.
Alex Burrows.
That name just but it's still one of those things. He's obviously evolved, and I think what helped him evolve so much was going to Washington and seeing, okay, we have Alexander Ovechkin, who is a generational talent of a goal scorer, but in order for this team to win and get past the second round, he's got to learn to play more of a two-way game. So Barry Trotz evolved, and you can see what he did with Washington in a very short amount of time, and he's applying that to New York as well, and but still applying that blue-collar mentality and that Nashville Predators way of hockey, that everyone is responsible out there. And I've seen that. You can see the evolution of Barry Trotz and how he continues to be a really good coach and squeezing every little bit that he can out of the talent he's given.
I would agree with you, though, that a lot of the Islanders' talent is not talked about enough. Barzal, Beauvillier. I really love Beauvillier's game. I think he's a really, really solid player for the Islanders. Pageau was a huge trade deadline pickup. Anders Lee as their captain. I mean, they have a lot of solid pieces on that team, and the goaltending duo of Varlamov and Greiss. I would say Thomas Wokoun at his best, talent-wise, better than Varlamov or Greiss, but just as a system, Barry Trotz is proving that if your lineup runs your system to a T and suffocates teams offensively and does not allow very many scoring chances, you're going to have success in this league. And that is exactly what Barry Trotz is doing, winning the cup in 18 with the Washington Capitals. And then each of the last 2 years, last year, sweeping Pittsburgh in round one, this year, knocking out Washington in round one, his old team. And now one win away, up 3-1 against the Flyers. And it's gotten to a point with Barry Trotz, Justin, where I was going through this today of tearing off the head coaches in the National Hockey League. And Barry Trotz, to me, as I was doing this exercise, is a top five coach in the NHL. And I don't really think that is up for debate.
No, not at all. I mean, I think then you start have to break it down for, well, then who's your top five? Because no doubt, top five right now.
So my tier one, which only has five, I cut it off at five. So these would be my five in no particular order. John Cooper, Barry Trotz, Bruce Cassidy in Boston, Peter DeBoer, and John Tortorella as the top five coaches in the league, as tier one. But there are so many good tier two coaches as well.
Oh, absolutely.
In tier two, I labeled Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh, Rod Brind'Amour, who Brind'Amour is, I think, in give him, you know, two or three more years, and he's probably on tier one. Quenneville, Craig Berube, Alain Vigneault, Paul Maurice. I even put Travis Green on tier two. Travis Green, I feel like, has done an exceptional job with this Vancouver Canucks team, a young Canucks team that has a very bright future. Jared Bednar, I put on tier two. Thought he caught a lot of unfair flack in his first year because, if you remember, they fired Patrick Waugh in like September or August that year, right before camp was starting, and they just threw Bednar to the wolves. And Bednar has done a really good job getting Colorado pointed in a great direction, along with GM Joe Sakic. But a lot of great coaches, but Barry Trotz is 100% in the top five. Coming up at the top of the hour, it will not be Slapshot Radio. It will be the debut edition of the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher. The Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher, so that should be a lot of fun, coming up at 7 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, which means Slapshot Radio is moving to 6 p.m. on Wednesday, leading into Penalty Box Radio with Justin Bradford, as heard right here on Preds Insiders right now, coming up at 7 on Wednesday. So the Hockey Block, Slapshot Radio, and Penalty Box Radio Wednesday evening as well. But coming up next, Matt Duchene had his first season in a Preds uniform. How would we assess that first season in a Preds uniform for 95? We'll get to that next. He's Justin Bradford. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday by Dr. Kelly Rice. Visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. And Osteostrong. Nashville. Ryan Porth joined by Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio here on tonight's edition of Preds Insiders. And Justin, Matt Duchene made his debut in a Preds uniform almost a year ago with how this hockey calendar has turned out. He was just preparing for his first NHL training camp, or I should say first Predators training camp, just 1 year ago today. And it seems like yesterday that the Preds were knocked out by the Arizona Coyotes in the qualifying series. And Matt Duchene faced a lot of heat for his performance, not only in that qualifying series, but for much of the 19-20 regular season, his first in a Predators uniform. Duchene got off to a blistering start, as we all know, in October, and then hit the skids when it came to his production and ended up with 42 points in 66 games. I think a lot of people would agree that he left a lot to be desired after receiving that 8-year, $64 million contract last July, making the same amount of money as Ryan Johansson. Johansson also faced a lot of criticism, but a lot of those haters or doubters or whoever you want to call them disappeared in the playoffs as Ryan Johansson amped up his game in the playoffs. But Matt Duchene didn't do that as much as Johansson did. So want to assess how we think Matt Duchene performed in his first season in a Predators uniform and where we think he's going here in Nashville. And Justin, what comes to mind for you when you think of 95's performance in his first season in Nashville?
So the first word I would say would be underwhelming, but I would qualify that with, but don't say certain people didn't try to warn you. And I'll say that because Jeremy K. Gover of the Nashville Predators Radio Network wrote a piece for 102.5 The Game where he talked about expectations for Matt Duchene and how it was getting hyped up a little bit too much because he had only reached 70 points once in his career, and that was in 13-14 when he was a young whippersnapper still. And it has been a long time since then where, I mean, he's eclipsed 50 points a few times, which is totally fine, but it's one of those things, expectations should have been tempered, and I think a lot of hype got put on Matt Duchene from all of us. I mean, because it was one of those things we knew David Poile wanted him. I mean, he was one of the pieces he wanted, but they settled for Kyle Turris at the time.
Yep.
And he's been talked about so much because of his love for Nashville and his connection to Nashville. And so that hype train kept growing where expectations grew with that, even though they shouldn't have been set as high as they were. I mean, in 66 games, he had 42 points. That's about on par with what he's done over his career. When you really look at it overall, aside from some blips, that's about what he's done throughout his whole career. So to think that 60 points would be outlandish, no, that'd be actually really good for his career. It would be 60 points because he's only eclipsed that twice in his career, it looks like. Twice. Oh, sorry. Yeah, three times because you combine Ottawa and Columbus at 60. So you look at what he's done over his career, expectation shouldn't have been 70 points. Expectation should be around 50 to 60. And so he's at 42 in 66 games. That's not too bad. But when you look at the way that the pressure was put on him to perform and to do even more and what he's getting paid, I understand the expectation there. And there were times when there was 9 games without a goal. He only had 13 goals all season. So the pressure's there. But I think one of the problems with the second line was you didn't have a good line with the right kind of chemistry. Whereas we see with Joffe, they all work off each other. Yeah, Victor Arvidsson is a small guy. Ryan Johansson is a power forward. Philip Forsberg is a guy that has a ridiculous shot and can also back check and is a big body as well to create some space. That allows for Victor Arvidsson to do things. You didn't have any of those guys that meshed well in the second line with Matt Duchene. So that's where you hope in the next season they're able to tabulate a little bit more to make it fit more to his needs so he can be successful. You want to put guys in places where they can be successful.
To look at Duchene's numbers a little deeper, yes, he had 42 points in 66 games, but he also had 9 points in the first 5 games,
yeah.
Which was unbelievable. It, you know, that was kind of the honeymoon phase.
Mm-hmm.
Back in October, you know, the first 5 games, he came out guns a-blazing, and it was really alongside Philip Forsberg and Mikael Granlund, or should we say...
Mikael Granlund.
There you go. So it was really alongside those two where Duchene was really thriving early in the season. And then I believe Forsberg suffered a little bit of an injury in October. Duchene went through some stuff as well, but... Look, outside of those first 5 games, Matt Duchene had 33 points in 61 games. That is not good enough when you're getting paid $8 million. And you bring up a fair point that this should have been, or most of this should have been expected on the front end from Matt Duchene, and maybe the expectations should not have been built up as high. You know, when there were those reports that Matt Duchene's asking price might be closer to $10 million last offseason, I was having a little bit of a panic attack thinking if David Poile pays that much for this player, that is going to be a huge disappointment. At $8 million, I was like, okay, that's what you're paying Ryan Johansson. That's acceptable. Matt Duchene should be a difference maker here. But for way too many stretches last season, Duchene was almost invisible, where night to night, he really wasn't a difference maker. You saw him out there. You saw him trying to make plays, but he wasn't actually making plays and creating a ton of offense every single game. And that is what you need from your top two centers. And Ryan Johansson has fallen victim to the same exact thing for way too many stretches, way too many times in a Preds uniform. But Ryan Johansson has backed it up at key times most of the time in a Preds uniform, where Matt Duchene, he's only had one postseason, and it was four games, and everyone's going to remember him for the offside in Game 3 that nullified Kyle Turris's go-ahead goal in the third period that really changed the entire outlook of that series against the Coyotes. But I do wonder, Justin, if this is what the Predators are going to get out of Matt Duchene. If this is who he is, and now that he's been paid the contract, there's no contract year for him to be uber motivated to go get the money. If this is what we should expect out of Matt Duchene in this stage of his career. I mean, he's 29 years old.
And then you think what is left in the contract too.
Seven more years.
Because you see the age of this team overall, and I know we'll discuss it later, but just the organizational rankings and giving young people opportunities, that they have a lot of money tied up, and guys that are, yes, they're still in their prime of their career given their age, but you want to be getting some guys there too that you have on ELCs where you have a lot of money to spend in other ways. That's, it's not all tied up in guys that are 30 or beyond. That's when it gets a little scary when it comes to the cap situation, especially when you have a flat cap coming up. It ties your hands a little bit.
I really hope Matt Duchene isn't the type of center that needs great talent around him to thrive, because you don't pay centers $8 million to be a player that needs others to make you better. If you're paying a center $8 million, that center should make others better. But throughout Matt Duchene's career, he hasn't really been the driving force on a team. When you look at the Colorado teams that went to the playoffs when he was there, he wasn't the star player making it all happen. When you look at the Columbus Blue Jackets last year when they made the playoffs, and he was sharing a lot of the offensive load with Artemi Panarin and a lot of other firepower on that Blue Jackets roster. And if the Jofa line is going to stay together, then Matt Duchene is going to have to drive offense on that second line. He's going to have to be the bell cow to get his line mates going. And clearly that didn't happen in the playoffs with Kyle Turris and Mikael Granlund. And hopefully moving forward, they can get that version of Matt Duchene.
They're going to need it. I mean, this is one of those things people are like, well, just get rid of Matt Duchene. Like, they're not going to get rid of Matt Duchene. That is not one of those things that is going to happen right now with the situation. That would be eating so much crow, it'd be ridiculous, and that's just not going to happen. Plus, I mean, the way we look at it, and given his contract, I think the way the league's going too, if he's at least a 55-point player, then it makes it look a little bit better. But like you're even saying before, is that he's got to be a difference maker. It can't be a quiet 55 points. It's got to be score a couple game winners, score a couple timely goals, put a couple things on there that make people forget about the offside thing. It's got to be timely goals to where it shows that he is stepping up to make a difference and not contributing for the sake of contributing, but he is doing things where it's an overtime winner, or he's even scoring in the shootout, or there's doing little things there that make people remember him. And of course, we all know this. I'm just saying what everybody's thinking, but he's got to score those types of goals that make a difference, to put an extra 2 points in when it could have been a 0 point or 1 point game. Those little things right there are going to make him earn back the respect of the fans as well. And I think build him some confidence too, because you can tell he was not that confident. He knows he had not the best season and not the season that he wanted out of himself for his debut in Nashville after the way that he started it. You can tell a lot of players wanted more out of themselves. Phillip Ford's, we talked a lot about the way that he had his February was awful, but he talked about how he accepted that and he looked at it and motivated that to do better. So that's what you hope out of Matt Duchene, that there's motivation there to make him want to be better and to do better. And you hope the coaching staff, which I believe they will, especially with John Hines and the way he wants to develop younger players, to put the right people on there. I just don't think it was necessarily available in the organization at the time to put with Matt Duchene for him to be able to create space for them to score. I'd love Matt Duchene to get 20 goals every year, but if he's popping off 45 assists or 50 assists, I'd take that as well, because I mean, he's making plays happen.
Sure. And when you look at someone who used to wear a Preds uniform, someone like a James Neal didn't produce more than what Matt Duchene produced, but James Neal was clutch as hell. I mean, James Neal made plays in money moments, and I know Neal's a winger, Duchene's a center, but Duchene can score goals. He has proven that throughout his NHL career, that he is very capable and very talented enough to score a lot of goals. Same with Ryan Johansson. And kind of feel like those two centers need to utilize that goal-scoring prowess that you know they have to get this team over the top offensively.
I mean, in 18-19, he had 70 points. He was a 31 goal scorer, 39 assists. And he played for two teams. When he played for Colorado and Ottawa. So he even had to go through a trade and still put up 70 points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he can do it. He can absolutely do it, and he can do it on an awful team as well.
Absolutely. Well, coming up next, The Athletic came out with their organizational rankings recently, basically ranking all 31 NHL teams below the NHL line. Where do the Preds rank in those organizational rankings? We will tell you next on Preds Insiders. He's Justin Bradford. I'm Ryan Porth. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth joined by Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio here on tonight's edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Justin, before the break, I teased the fact that The Athletic came out with their NHL organizational rankings last week. Corey Pronman, their NHL draft expert, he's really good at what he does when it comes to looking at up-and-coming prospects within the NHL, also draft prospects before the NHL draft. And every year, Corey Pronman puts out his organizational rankings. And the Preds typically aren't very well high on the rankings. And that is certainly the case this season. In Corey Pronman's ranking of the 31 teams in the National Hockey League, and really it's the 31 systems. The 31 systems below the NHL line, really. He does have a criteria, and that criteria does not include skaters older than 22 as of September 15th, 2020, who have played 25 NHL games in a season or 50 career games, or goalies with 10 games in a season or 25 in his career, nor any player age 26 or older as of September 15th, 2020. So when we go through this list, you will hear a current Nashville Predator and another one that has played for the Preds here in the last year as well. But the organizational ranking for the Nashville Predators in 2020, Justin, is 29th. Not a great place to be. In 2019, it was 26th. So Corey Pronman, in his mind, NHL draft expert for The Athletic, saying that the Preds organization, or their system, should say, has taken a step back in a year. Why is that in your mind?
I think it's still not reaping, but you're suffering from the lack of emptying your cupboard over the past couple seasons, with especially that 2018 draft was rough. I mean, sitting there until the fourth round for the Predators to finally call a draft pick was a little rough. And when you're not able to pick in the first three rounds of the draft, that hurts you, because at least in round one or round two, you're looking at a kid that's going to be an actual true prospect in 1 or 2 years, like Philip Tomasino, like Igor Afanasyev. You're expecting him to be able to be NHL ready very shortly. Or Dante Favreau, I mean, he was drafted in 2016, and it took 3 years. That's what you're expecting out of first round pick. So you lose a year, you're losing true NHL ability right there of who knows what you could have reaped from there. And then trading away picks before, I mean, they missed the first round pick in 2015. And then you have a little bit of success as well, where they're drafting late in the first round as well. It's been one of those problems the Predators have had, aside from 1 year or the expansion year. They have not been awful enough to draft high. And that's, it's a great thing to know that your team's competitive, but you're also suffering from so many things because you're not going to get anywhere close to generational talents unless you're god awful. And it, when we've seen it with Chicago, Kane and Taves, Pittsburgh, Crosby, Malkin, I mean, Washington, Ovechkin, I mean, all these teams that you're seeing drafting highs because they were awful. Edmonton, look how many times they've had top three picks. It's absolutely ridiculous. So they haven't been there unless you count the Seth Jones year, but even then they were fourth. They were in the top three to get that center that the pretty much everyone was saying they would get, which was Barkov, who was a great talent. All the way back to the 2012 draft where they didn't have a first-round pick either. So all these things are catching up to them, and they're hoping, obviously, to win a cup. And you look at these rankings, which we were discussing off-air, and the teams that are below them are two teams that have cups recently in Washington and Pittsburgh. You have a cup. That's fine because you had to sell a few things in order to make your roster good enough to where you could win the cup. The Predators got very, very close, but they weren't able to overcome it. And it's one of those things that it takes years to rejuvenate your system from that. And there's some good talent in the system, but it's just not enough. You want a plethora of talent to choose from because, as we all know, the draft is a lottery. You don't know how these guys are going to end up, and you'd rather have a lot more to choose from than very little.
Well, speaking of the lottery, the Preds did have a chance at the number one overall pick earlier this month when the rigged NHL draft lottery ended up having the New York Rangers selecting first overall to get Alexi Lafreniere. Did I pronounce it correctly, Justin?
That's actually very good. That was very good, yes.
Okay, but not high-end?
If we're talking in the Pronman rankings here, I'd put that at a 60, but not an 80.
Okay, all right. So, to your point, the Preds have never been good enough to win the Stanley Cup, nor bad enough to get the elite of the elite in the National Hockey League, like a McDavid, like a Crosby, like an Ovechkin. And when you look at the player rankings that Corey Pronman put together in this organizational ranking for the Nashville Predators, Number one on the list was Elli Tolvanen. Number two, Dante Fabbro. Number three, Philip Tomasino. Number four, Yakov Trenin. Number five, Igor Afanasyev. And when you look at those five players, Pronman labeled all five of them as either very good or legit NHL players. But to our point, there is no elite high-end talent within that top five, hence the 29th overall ranking across the entire NHL. And when you have very good NHL prospects or legit NHL prospects, but no elite prospects, then you're going to need one of these top five to turn into something that is at least close to elite and overperform their expectations once they get to the NHL. Because we all know this Nashville Predators team here in the next 2 years desperately needs contributions from entry-level contracts with as much money as they have spent on either veteran players or players just entering their prime.
You're absolutely right. And that's where it takes years of planning down the road for this to happen. And you hope that Tolvanen does come out to where he's contributing in the middle six. That's what I think you should expect out of him. Contribute in the middle six. He's one of those guys that in the previous segment that I think would be helpful for Matt Duchene. If you can get Elli Tolvanen in the puck and dish it to him, he has a ridiculous shot, but he's got to have space. So you have to be able to make space for a player like Elli Tolvanen. He's not always making his own space. Philip Forsberg makes his own space. Mm-hmm. Elli Tolvanen does not make his own space like that. He doesn't have the type of body for it. It's nothing against his size. Everybody, you can be different sizes and still be successful. You can be small, but you can have a full team of small guys. That's worth balance. You got to have a lot of balance. And Prom even talks about size a little bit in here, that some of these top prospects for the Predators, they don't have big size aside from Igor Afanasyev and even Yakov Trenin, who is obviously more than willing to utilize his body at times in the games. But you don't have those guys that put it all together to be that true power forward. Afanasyev, I think, has that potential. I mean, he's considered a legit NHL player, but again, it's middle six. at most. I don't see him being the top line, the number one line. And when you need that, it's hard to get that in free agency, especially post lockout. It's hard to get the type of thing in free agency because you have to pay a lot of money for that kind of talent, or you're going to get somebody that's just coming off their prime to get the kind of thing. And you hope that they'll be able to contribute on a short-term contract or something like that. So it's hard. You have to be able to develop this in your system. And that's where you hope in this year's draft. I mean, the Predators have their first, they have 2 seconds and 2/3, and it's supposed to be a deep draft. And this is what you're looking for 3-4 years down the road of what that could potentially mean for this team. It is a very, very, very important draft for the Nashville Predators this year by having that many picks in the first 3 rounds. They could do a lot of good for the future of the organization to make very smart picks and not take any risks in those 5 picks as well, because you want to see this go up and not down like it did because they're spending too much money already, and you got to make room for some of these guys. And we know there's going to be some moves made in this offseason. We already know it's going to happen, and hopefully it opens it up for some of these guys to get some opportunities out there on the ice.
And we all know that those 5 picks in the first 3 rounds, they're not going to contribute to Nashville next season. They're not, right, unless something unexpected happens. It's very rare for the 11th overall pick in the NHL to be playing in the NHL right after being drafted. So it really comes down to these players that Corey Pronman listed as being key parts in the short term to help that youth movement with the Nashville Predators. And you look at the guy number one on his list, Elli Tolvanen, and an excerpt from his write-up on Elli Tolvanen, which he created a category just for Tolvanen, which was giving him a 70 grade on the shot, which is not a surprise because we all know Tolvanen's shot is incredible. But Pronman goes on to write, he says, quote, Tolvanen has great talent, but he has physical limitations. He's undersized, and while he skates fine, he lacks great rink length speed, and his skill plays get stopped a lot when he can't get around a defender. He also gets pushed out to the perimeter a lot. I still see so much talent, and he's a player who drives shots at a very high level that I think he will make it. And going to your point, Justin, of how he needs to bulk up, you look at Philip Forsberg when he made his NHL debut versus what he is now, night and day when you look at the physical attributes that Forsberg brings on the ice. Tolvanen, like Forsberg, had a couple cups of coffee here in Nashville before he became a full-time Nashville Predator. They're going to need Tolvanen to become a full-time Nashville Predator this season. They need Tolvanen to pan out sooner rather than later.
Absolutely, 100% agree. And that's where I've been making the point in so many ways when people ask, is that now's the time. It's the use it or get off the pot moment. And not saying that means he's a failed prospect, but it's like he has to make this jump now because this organization needs him and his contract to contribute. He can't just be sitting in Milwaukee anymore. He's got to step it up again. That's why I think it's a good thing that he's been loaned to Jokerit right now, because it continues to get him playing time. Because when you think of how long that break was with AHL being off, and with him not getting playing time other than just practice with the team during return to play, but no games in there, and how long that offseason would have been, that's where you can tell they know how important it is that he continues to amp up his game and continue to be fresh, because they expect him to contribute next season. And that's where it'll be important for Matt Duchene, as we said, to step up even more to create space, where if you're drawing the defense, if Matt Duchene's drawing defense, that which should hopefully leave Elli Tolvanen in his sweet spot, the opposite of the Ovechkin sweet spot. I mean, that's what you hope for Elli Tolvanen, because he has a sweet spot as well for shots, because that's why it's a ridiculous shot. Open up space, let him rip one off. That's how he can be successful. But he's not going to be successful if he's placed on the fourth line or he's placed on the third line that just has a little bit of energy guys out there. He's got to be with other elite talent that can create space for him by drawing attention away from the defense. That is the way that Elli Tolvanen is going to be successful. So I hope they obviously will take that into consideration, because I want Tolvanen to do well. You can see he's made a lot of the right steps. He's put the work in too. People will say that he might be lazy, but when he continues to put the work in by being in Nashville last offseason and training, doing all these things like what Forsberg's done as well, continue to train, continue to hit the ice, learning. Carl Taylor's done a lot for Elli Tolvanen. All those factors go into play that, yes, it is his time to come in and see what he's capable of doing.
Coming up next, did the Preds try to model themselves after another team? This is something that Justin and I were going to get to on a previous show this month. We will finally get to it coming up next. He's Justin Bradford. I'm Ryan Porth. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. and The Game Nashville app. Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio hanging out with me this hour coming up at 7 o'clock. It is the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher, the debut edition of that show. Joe Fisher, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, so should be a great hour. Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach, will be his star guest coming up at the top of the hour. So stay tuned for that. Slapshot Radio will not be on. It will be on 6 o'clock Wednesday leading into Justin Bradford's 7 p.m. Penalty Box Radio. Now, Justin, one thing that we were going to discuss earlier this month when you were in studio with me was a theory that I had, or a thought I had, I should say, during the playoffs and shortly thereafter with this Nashville Predators team. And I want to go back to the 2017 playoffs when the Predators made that run all the way to the Stanley Cup final, and they looked fantastic doing so. And really, they were clearly underdogs the entire postseason. They weren't favorites by any stretch of the imagination. They were pretty well built. They were deep. They were built for playoff success, and they had their stars step up. When you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins that year, and really the season before as well, in 16 and then in 17, where the Penguins won back-to-back Stanley Cups, the Penguins did that primarily on speed on their roster. You look up and down the roster in 2016 and then in 2017, there's not a whole lot of grit on that Penguins team. Ian Cole defensively, okay, I'll grant you that. Patrick Hornquist up front, okay. But for the most part, those Penguins teams were built on sheer speed. And it felt like with the Predators playing at a very fast pace as well in the 2017 postseason, that the NHL was kind of shifting towards a speed phase within these seasons. And maybe that was going to become the copycat of, okay, well, if the Penguins are winning cups on speed, we can win cups on speed. Well, here in the last couple of years, Justin, we've seen a lot of coaches have caught up to that speed with their systems, where you look at John Tortorella and the Columbus Blue Jackets, where it didn't work this year, it worked last year by sweeping the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round. We talked extensively about Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders earlier in the show, where their system, yes, they are playing with speed, but their system, where they are suffocating other teams, is slowing down teams. The Dallas Stars are doing it right now at times with the Colorado Avalanche. And it made me have this thought that I want to run by you of, when you look at all the moves that the Predators made here in the last 3 years, outside of the trade deadline acquisitions of Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle to make up for size that they didn't have at the time, it felt like speed was a pretty big emphasis. And if it wasn't speed, it was more offensive skill. And maybe during that time, they didn't focus enough on, A, the way they played and the system that they were running, or B, the fact that they really don't have any grit on this roster, especially at forward. So when you think of the Predators and the fact that, yes, the Penguins won cups on speed, but if you don't have high-end talent, you're really not going to win or have playoff success unless you have a defensive system that can shut other teams down.
I mean, to right off the bat, you look at who the Predators signed right after that season, the cup winning season when they lost to them, Nick Bonino. And it wasn't necessarily a speed thing, but they're getting a proven champion who was part of that HBK line with Carl Hagelin and Phil Kessel. I mean, Carl Hagelin, even if he's not necessarily producing a lot of points, is speed. I mean, he was listed as one of the fastest players on the ice multiple years in a row. And then you look at the youth of the Pittsburgh Penguins as well that helped them in terms of speed, like a Jake Guentzel. I mean, he had 21 points in 25 games in the playoffs for the Penguins in that 17 cup final year. He's only 22 years old. And that's crazy to think of that as well, how much he stepped up. I mean, Connor Sheary as well had some speed. And on the defensive side, Ali Mata. I mean, they had a good balance as well. But I think that's where we saw the shift of the NHL going for speed as well. We've seen this over the past, decade, where you're seeing a lot of these grit guys go away. But as we've said before, too, how teams need a jerk that can also produce. So you see the true just grit going away, but you need to have physical guys that can also put the puck in the net. More of the, and they don't just grow everywhere, the Tom Wilsons or Tkachuks, Matthew Tkachuks, those kinds of guys. They don't
Brad Marchand.
Big guy, Brad Marchand. So, but they're willing to mix it up, but they can back it up by producing the scoreboard. They earn their time to be able to mix it up because they produce as well. And not saying that, that Pittsburgh's done that, but it was part of that evolution, I think, right kind of in the middle, because they had plenty of veteran talent. They had a couple slow guys, but they had some youth that invigorated them as well. And the Predators don't necessarily have that youth right now. And they have some speedy guys, but they haven't had those guys that just scream speed right now. I mean, you have some power forwards. And Forsberg really isn't that fast of a guy.
Sure.
I mean, I would say that Roman Josi might be the fastest guy on this team.
Victor Arvidsson.
He's
up there too, yep.
And that's – yeah. So it's one of those things that speed is very, very important in this game. If we're looking in the playoffs right now, how important speed is and some youth are for some of these teams. And even if they're not in the playoffs right now, because it's so weird, you look at some teams like Carolina and what they've been able to put together with their youth and some of their speed as well. And it's just got to be a good mix of things. And so we're continuing to see the evolution of it. But I think for the Predators, I would focus more on they wanted to have a bottom sixth line that could produce more. And even though David Poy was saying Nick Bonino was going to be the second set line center, I don't think it was ever supposed to be that way. I think he was supposed to be that same role of being the third line guy that's going to be able to contribute. And you know what? He's actually done that. I mean, last year especially, Nick Bonino had almost a career year if it not cut short for the pause. He was doing exactly what he was brought in to do. That's why he has value. That's why we talk about maybe trading him, because he's one of those guys that's produced to his contract, really, as a third-line guy. He's helped that America line produce for the Predators. And so he's brought in to do pretty much exactly what he's done, and he did that with Pittsburgh. He's done it with Nashville. So I think it's again, focusing on that depth. And we see that with so many teams like the Dallas Stars that you brought up. They have some speed, but they also have plenty of depth as well on that team. And it shows the importance of that too. So I think there's certain parts of that Pittsburgh model. We look back at other models as well, like the Detroit model, how they brought in plenty of Russians and especially Swedes. I mean, Patrick Hornquist was the Tomas Holmstrom for the Predators for so long. And
yes, that's
been his style of play. And you just continue to see teams copycatting each other if they see success. So I think Detroit really helped set that model up in the 90s and early 2000s. And people started going that way of having some speed, a little bit of grit and tenacity, but also you want to bring in a good mix of foreign athletes too. And you've seen so many teams be successful by doing all those types of things.
Well, real quick, before we have to wrap this up, when you do look at the Stanley Cup champions of last decade, if you didn't have a star player like an Ovechkin or a Crosby or Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews in Chicago, the Stanley Cup champions were largely well-built teams that didn't have that much speed, but they played with a lot of speed. They played with a lot of grit, and they had a defensive system that just shut other teams down. You look at the LA Kings, you look at the Boston Bruins, look at the St. Louis Blues. Mm-hmm. Those were all teams that fit that model that I just described. And the Predators don't have a star player, and they don't have that model. Not anywhere close to that model. And I think that's the large task for David Poile here this offseason and moving forward, is trying to create that model, because you do not have the Ovechkin, the Crosby, or the Kane and Toews.
Again, it goes back to the whole, they haven't been awful enough to get there. I mean, and it'd be tough for this fan base to go through that, because expectations have been so high, but that's kind of what the model is that sometimes if you're doing this, not that you want to, but if you're awful enough at the right time, you get a really darn good player. So,
right. Absolutely. Well, Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio, thanks as always for hanging out here on Preds Insiders. We'll be looking forward to Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. With you and the crew.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Ryan.
For Justin Bradford, I'm Ryan Poor. Thank you so much for listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, it is the inaugural episode of the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher. Keep it locked right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game.